Council for June the 3rd, 2025 to order. Start with roll call.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Debbie Zula.
Councillor Mike Kekkonen.
Clerk Administrator Carly Burton. Deputy Clerk Mary Smith.
Mayor David Ward. Any declarations of pecuniary and or personal interest in the general nature thereof?
Yes, I'll declare a conflict of interest on 19.1.
Okay, report. We have resolution 25-234, moved by Councillor Haskell, second by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar has hereby approved the agenda for this regular meeting of Council, as amended, to move item 11.1, delegation from MPAC, to precede public meeting item 10.1. Any discussion of that? Call the question. All those in favor? None pulled. Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit, and work towards truth and reconciliation. We have a presentation from MPAC. We have resolution, I'll read this first, even though it hasn't happened yet. Resolution 25-235, moved by Councillor Kekkonen and second by Councillor Haskell. Be resolved that Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the deputation from the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation, Caitlin Potts and Christina Williams, on property assessment and taxation system for information purposes. Call the question. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Okay, so either Ms. Williams or Ms. Potts, whoever is going to start us off here, it's all yours. I think you have a document to show us. Is that going to show up on the screen for everyone? Okay.
Thank you so much. We'll just go ahead and get the presentation loaded here. Wonderful. We just need to go to presenter view there, and then we're good. Perfect. Okay, did everyone see that okay?
Looks good, yes.
Perfect. Thank you so much, and good evening, and thank you for having me today. My name is Caitlin Potts, and I am account manager with Public Affairs and Customer Experience at the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation. Here with me today is Christina Williams, our account support coordinator. Next slide, please. Next slide. Perfect. So at MPAC, we are Ontario's property assessment experts. Now our job is to assess and classify more than 5.7 million properties across Ontario worth a combined value of more than $3.2 trillion. Every municipality uses MPAC's assessments to make informed decisions about their community, including the distribution of property taxes. Next slide. Now, there are four key players in Ontario's property assessment and taxation system. First, we have the provincial government, who is responsible for setting assessment and taxation legislation, as well as policies. They also determine the education property tax rate. There's also an independent body that adjudicates appeals of MPAC's assessed values, and that is known as the Assessment Review Board. At MPAC, we're an independent, not-for-profit corporation funded by all of Ontario municipalities. Our role is to accurately assess and classify all properties in Ontario in compliance with the Assessment Act and regulations set forth by the Government of Ontario. We are accountable through a board of directors appointed by the Minister of Finance. Municipalities such as yourselves determine budget requirements, set their tax rates, and collect property taxes to pay for municipal services. Municipalities will use MPAC's assessments and the established tax rates to distribute their tax requirements to ratepayers. And finally, we have the property owners who pay their property tax bill and help set market value through ongoing property purchases and sales. Next slide, please. So as you can imagine, maintaining Ontario's property database is very important. Property data is continuously updated so that municipal records are accurate when our municipal stakeholders are making important tax decisions. Maintaining Ontario's property database includes inspecting and assessing new construction, additions, and renovations, responding to property owner inquiries, and working with them to help them understand their assessment. We also support municipalities through ongoing support and regular meetings. We offer a platform called Municipal Connect, where municipal stakeholders can obtain assessment-related information within their municipality. And we work collaboratively on projects that are important to municipalities, such as digital building permitting. We also have important statutory duties, such as handling requests for reconsiderations, which is when someone disagrees with their assessment, and maintaining people data by tracking school support for over 5.7 million properties within Ontario. Next slide, please. So Ontario's property tax system is based on everyone paying their portion of what it costs to deliver community services. And to do this, all properties are assigned a value at a common valuation date. This is a principle called current value assessment, or CVA. It's the price a property might reasonably be expected to sell for if sold by a willing seller to a willing buyer after appropriate time and exposure on an open market. The current legislative valuation date is January 1st, 2016. The Ontario government paused the 2020 province-wide assessment update due to COVID-19, and in addition, the Ontario government is conducting a review of the property assessment and taxation system and has committed to pausing on a province-wide reassessment until that review concludes. Next slide, please. So let's talk briefly about valuation. In Ontario, there are three industry-wide standardized approaches to valuing properties. The first of these approaches is the direct comparison approach, which is used primarily for residential properties. Now, with this approach, we analyze sales of comparable properties that were sold for a similar or identical use as the property to be valued. Next, we have the income approach, and this is used for properties like office buildings. And we have the cost approach, which is for properties such as mini warehousing and general purpose industrial properties. Now, no matter what valuation approach we use, the selection of comparable sales transactions serves as a foundation for establishing our property assessments. Next slide, please. And when we're looking at the valuation of a residential property, although our analysis tool considers over 200 factors, these five factors on the screen make up approximately 85% of a typical home's value. These include the location of the property's lot dimensions, exterior square footage, the quality of construction of a home, as well as the age of the property. And the age does get adjusted for any major renovations or additions that have occurred to a structure. Next slide, please. So we talked about how we value a property, but what draws our attention to a property? Now, it's typically one of the following things: a market sale, a request from a municipality or a property owner to review the property, building permit activity, or a request for reconsideration or an appeal, which trigger MPAC to go out and conduct a review of the property. And when it comes to building permits and plans, MPAC's role is to turn that into assessment for a municipality. Our municipal stakeholders rely on MPAC assessments to levy property tax. And every year, MPAC processes on average about 300,000 building permits. Now, those could be for anything from new developments or alterations or renovations that occur to a property. Next slide, please. So after we've assessed a property or changed an assessment, we mail the property owner a property assessment notice. Sometimes property owners don't agree with our assessed value, and if a property owner does not agree, they can connect with the municipality or council, and they may let you know that they disagree with our assessment. But it is important to remember that the property assessments are not taxation. So if you are to receive an inquiry from a property owner, you can help us by asking the property owner a few questions. The first question being, could they have sold their property on January 1st, 2016 for that assessed value? Two, have they visited a Beltmite property to review the information MPAC has on file regarding their property? Three, have they used About My Property to conduct a comparable research on assessment values within their area? And finally, if a property owner still disagrees with their assessment, they do have the option to file a request for reconsideration, and we will review that free of charge. Now, the fastest way to start that review is by filing the request for reconsideration directly on About My Property, which can be found on our MPAC.ca website. Next slide, please. So let's spend a moment here to address the relationship between property taxes and assessments. So assessments distribute taxes. They do not determine the taxes paid. The most important factor is not how much the assessed value of a property has changed, but rather how the assessed value has changed relative to the average change within that class, within that community. Now we do have a video available within our municipal toolkit. It's titled, How Your Property Taxes Are Calculated Based on the Assessed Value of Your Home. So we'll take a moment here to watch that video on the next slide.
Property taxes are based on your home's value. What you might not know is that an increase in your home's value doesn't necessarily mean your taxes will go up. To explain, let's take a look at how your property taxes are calculated. Imagine there's a town that only has three homes, and they're each worth a different amount. The total cost to provide all of the town's services is $1,200. This is collected through property taxes. Each homeowner pays property taxes based on their home's assessed value. So we take the total cost of services and divide it by the total property value. This tax rate is applied to all the houses to get enough money to pay for the town's services. Each homeowner pays according to the assessed value of their home. And every 4 years, the houses are reassessed. Let's say all three properties have gone up equally in value. The total cost of services hasn't changed, but the total property value has increased. When this happens, there will be a decrease in the tax rate. Now, when we apply that new rate on all the homes, everyone still pays the same. Now, let's say another 4 years has gone by, and these homes are reassessed. During this time, the house on the right gains more market value than the other two. The total value of all the homes have increased, which means the town has to calculate a new tax rate. With this new tax rate, the first two homes will actually pay less than the home on the right that was reassessed at a higher value. Since the cost of services hasn't changed, the town doesn't need to collect more property taxes on the whole. However, since property taxes are based on a home's value, taxes for each individual home could potentially go up or down based on the rest of the homes. So, what happens when the cost to provide services goes up? Well, it means more property taxes need to be collected from every home, and a new tax rate is calculated. To get the new rate, we take that amount that the town now needs and divide it by all of the property values. The new rate is applied to all the homes, and now everyone has to pay the new tax amount to continue to fund the town's services. So, let's review. 1. Property taxes are based on the assessed value of a home. If all assessments go up equally, everyone pays the same. 2. If all assessments do not go up equally, there's a redistribution of the tax. 3. If the town's cost to provide services increases, the municipality may choose to increase the tax rate. When this happens, everyone pays their share of that increase. And that explains the relationship between property value and property taxes.
Great. Thank you. Next slide, please. So our focus is always on building awareness about property assessment and taxation and MPAC's role. And we understand that property assessment can be complex. We hear that from municipalities as well as property owners. And that's why we've been communicating with property owners and Ontarians more than ever to help them understand the property assessment and taxation system, learn more about who we are, and easily find information and resources that they may need. From social media campaigns, educational videos like the one you just saw, to our new first-time homebuyers hub, where new property owners can access information to help them navigate the property assessment and taxation system. We continue to focus our efforts on providing helpful and easy-to-understand resources directly to property owners and to municipalities such as yourselves to help understand and answer property owner questions. Next slide, please. So I just want to take a moment and thank you for having me here today. Now, a big part of MPAC's commitment to service is staying connected with our municipalities. So if not already, I would like to make sure you're subscribed to our In Touch newsletter, which is a monthly municipal e-newsletter, and that can be done through our MPAC.ca website. And lastly, we just wanted to go ahead and share our contact information. If you ever have any questions in the future, please don't hesitate to reach out. Thank you so much for having us.
Okay, thank you very much. Appreciate that. I'll turn to the council, first of all, for any questions, and I'll open it up to the public. Just interested in your role, I guess, how you work with our chief building official. And could you just go through quickly that process for the assessment purposes?
Thank you. Through you, Your Worship. Definitely. So we receive building permits from your chief building official on a monthly basis. So they come into our system. Once those come in, we will review them, wait for finals and occupancy dates that come through as well, and we will head out to conduct assessments. So typically when those come into our system will do kind of an internal buffer time as to when, let's say, a typical home is typically ready within the township, and our assessors will go out to that property to conduct the assessment. We also receive finals and occupancy information from your chief building official as well on those monthly files. So we're continuously getting some updated information, as well as digital building plans, which help us to add the assessment on for your municipality.
Okay, Councillor Kagan.
Further on in our agenda, item 21.2, it's dealing with tax ratios, and it's based on a letter from the Ministry of Finance, December 11, 2024. And this is a result of a change in the aggregate extraction property class ratio. And it mentions that this class is reflected on the assessment roll that the Municipal Property Assessment Corporation has delivered to municipalities on December 10th, 2024. And it has Ontario Regulation 385.98, where it lists the municipalities and the different tax ratios, transition ratios, and average transition ratios. I'm just wondering why there's such discrepancies between the different municipalities on those ratios.
Thank you. Through you, Your Worship. Yeah, this is definitely one we can definitely take offline as well to get some more information specific for the township to be able to share out. I can share that out through your treasurer and Carly as well with some specific details on it. But each area would have their own ratio that's set for those. It may vary area to area depending on the assessed value or market value of those properties. But I can definitely take that back and provide some additional information out to Carly and your treasurer as well on that for you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Another question, we often hear this too, how property is assessed. I noticed that one of the criteria is location. Could you just clarify whether properties situated on an unassumed road or a private road are assessed in a different manner perhaps than a year-round road, or are they all the same?
Thank you. Through you, Russia. That is a great question. So the type of road that a property is on will account for part of the assessed value. So a property that's on a year-round maintained road may have a slightly different assessment than one that's, say, water access only or a private road access. So it may have a slight indicator. It is one of the variables that we look at. It's one of over those 200 variables.
Okay, thank you. Further questions from council? We'll open it to the public. Here for this presentation or another one, but you're certainly welcome to ask any questions. Now is the opportunity. You have the microphone here if you wish to. Now, some of us on council have been here for quite some time. We predate MPAC. I guess the big question is 2016 values right now. When is, and I think you mentioned this in the intro, but that it's under review, but is there any possible idea of when that review will be complete and when we'll get more up to date? I think the whole idea of the MPAC initially was the current value assessment. Current value assessment right now is quite a few years out of date. So I'm just wondering how that actually operates. I'm thinking of building permits in particular. Which value do you look at? The what it's costing now when a person builds something, or the 2016 value?
Thank you, through you, Your Worship. So you are correct. Values right now are assessed with a current valuation date, legislative valuation date of January 1st, 2016. So as new homes are built or new structures are built, they are valued at that point in time as of January 1st, 2016. As of right now, the province has announced that the next reassessment update will be paused until that review concludes. I don't have any further information right now on timeline, though, but once we have more information, we will be sure to share that out with all of you.
Okay, thank you. And one other question about our building permits is probably more for our CBO, but I noticed when you did the presentation for Whitestone, I think they have a three-year limit on a building permit, and I'm looking at what we have, and I think we have a five-year. Does MPAC have any suggestions on how long that period should be, or is that left up to each municipality?
Thank you, through you. So with assessment, we can assess a home for current and go back 2 years prior. So we do try to pick assessment up and go up to structures within that three-year period, try to get information, and we will work jointly with your building department. So we'll work with your chief building official to get any information, finals, occupancies, or even just status updates on those. So we really try to keep the permits as up to date within that three-year time period.
Okay, thank you. Your actual visits to property to do reassessments, that's based, I think you'd said, on the CBO and building permits. Is there, at any time, do you come out on comments from the public? Maybe somebody is building and has a major building going up, but maybe there's no permit for it. Do you act or react to comments from the public, or do you just go through the CBO?
Thank you, through you, Your Worship. We would, yeah, any information from the public, from the municipality. We also conduct sales reviews of properties as well. So every time that there's a sale that occurs, we will review the property at that time as well. We do get inquiries even from property owners who are currently building and they want to ensure that their home is assessed as quickly as possible. So they will call in and schedule an appointment time with one of our assessors as well. So definitely a number of avenues we can have information come through the municipality, property owners themselves, sales reviews and building permit activity, as well as requests for reconsideration or appeals. So a number of avenues.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Zulan.
Yeah, I was just curious. The township pays quite a bit to MPAC yearly. I don't know what the figure is exactly. Does anybody have an idea? But I know it's quite a bit. And I don't believe that that's acceptable with the 2016. That's where you are right now. When do you think you should? I think you should be taking something back. That the amount of money that the municipalities are paying to MPAC, and they're that far behind. We should be doing something to bring that up to speed.
Thank you, through you, Your Worship. So currently the legislative valuation date is January 1st, 2016. So once the province concludes the review of the assessment taxation system, at that time they did announce that the reassessment will be on pause until that review concludes. So at this time I don't have any information on an updated legislation valuation date. But I can definitely chat as well offline with your treasurer about some of the levy information as well and bring that back to you.
Yes.
So is can you reach out and find out when they figure that that review will be completed?
Thank you, through you, Your Worship. At this time, I don't have any further information as to when the review will be completed. The government did just announce in their 2025 budget that they are still in the process of conducting the review at this time.
Yes, go ahead.
So, I realize realize that. You said it a couple times now, but I'm asking you if you can reach out and find out from someone when they would possibly believe that that would be, review will be completed. And you could get back to us.
Thank you, through your worship. Yeah, we are having conversations with the province at this time with the review, so once we have any further information, we will be sure to share that out with you.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions from council? Last call for the public, online or in person? Oh, well, thank you very much for your presentation. We appreciate that, Ms. Potts and Ms. Williams. And a lot of information gleaned tonight, I think, and we have a contact number, so that's good too.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks very much.
Thank
Take
you.
Care.
You're welcome to stay for the rest of the meeting if you wish. I guess it must stay. Okay, we moved things around, so now we're on to the public meeting. We have Resolution 25-236, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Haskin. We resolve the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby move into a public meeting at
6:56.
6:56 p.m. for discussions regarding the proposed declaration of surplus lands being planned 249 Block A, a 1.38-acre waterfront parcel situated at the corner of Craigmore Drive and Burnett's Road, as well as lands fronting Dockside Drive to facilitate the creation of 5 new rural lots, each with a minimum frontage of 90 meters, with the intent to offer properties for sale on the open market. I'll put that out to council. I'll call a question first of all. All those in favor? None opposed? Carried. Now we'll proceed here just by going through the background and perhaps why we're doing this and looking at our finances in the township and various things that led up to this concept. And then what we'll do is I'll turn it over to council for any comments and then to the public as well. And again, I'd ask when the public speaks to go to the microphone and provide us with your name. We don't need your name first of all, but if you're going to speak, it'd be good to have that on record. And keep in mind that everything is recorded. I think you may know that already, but it's all on the audio recording. So I don't know whether, Charlie, you want to give a little background on this? I'll put you on the spot. No? Okay. Just looking at our situation when this council came into being 3 years ago, I guess, close to it, then the previous council had purchased some property with the intent, I believe, now I can't read their thoughts, but of moving the public works yard to a new location down on, I'll still call it Fire 152, even though they do have new names now. They ran into some problems, first of all, with the actual purchase of the property, and a little bit of confusion in what was being purchased and what wasn't. One of the things that came out of it, of course, is that the roads and 152 subdivision are now in the township name, so they are owned by the township. They're unassumed at this point, and that's another whole process that we've started to look at. The other thing they ran into was one of the locations they're looking at for the building, and they had drawings made up, MTO entrance. The one thing that they'd run into, well, first of all, not getting MTO permission, first of all, and that created a problem because there's no guarantee that MTO would even give an entrance permit there without an extra lane, perhaps, or a number of conditions. And the cost was quite expensive. Our previous director of operations had come up with some estimates. So we're sitting at a situation, and always in the works was our present public works building, which is about 20 years old, and there was an idea of putting two more bays, maybe even three, according to our previous director of operations, but on the end, facing a different direction, but there was room there. When the septic was first put in for that building, about 20 years ago, we made sure that it was set back far enough that more bays could be added. The original concept was for another bay, but the township just couldn't afford it at the time. So that's the other thing, and then the dome was put in as well.
two domes were a possibility, but the site was limited in how much you could put on that property and still do the storage of material as well. So we're in a situation now where we have the property down on Fire Route 152, much of which we really don't have a purpose for as a township. If we decide to proceed, and this seems to be the way we're going, but that's still open for discussion, of adding bays to the present Public Works garage, and also all the other capital projects that we have in the works, such as improving Herdville Road and some of the other roads in the township, and not getting any cheaper to do that. In order to keep the taxes at a level that's manageable, we're looking at property that we now have in the possession of the township and may not be of any particular use at this time, but it may be useful to other people. And that would help keep costs down. It would help us to not have to borrow, because that's when you start to, of course, pay the interest and any number of things over years. I'm sure you've already got that background and experience. So we thought this would be the time. The market was quite hot a couple of years ago. Then it cooled off, and there seems to be another resurgence. Now, I'm just speaking here about Dockside in particular. There's a situation where, and as you know, maybe as well, our official plan and our zoning bylaw, first of all, our official plan has been held up by the Ministry of Municipal Affairs for over a year for review. We started the process, and it's just on hold until they send us comments. One thing that our planner had talked about at the time of revising and updating our zoning and our official plan was to increase the size of lots so you wouldn't have the potential for contamination. As you know, some of you are probably on some pretty minimal lots when they were first put in years ago back in the 50s and 60s with 100-foot frontage. We're looking here now, and I think it's a 60-meter frontage at this point for a rural or rural residential. We're looking at 90-meter frontages here. That seems to be the way we're going in the future if we ever get a new plan in place, at least an amended one. And also the size. It's been 0.4 of a hectare is our minimum right now that you can actually have a lot, and that's in rural and rural residential. We're looking at increasing that to a 0.8 to be comparable to the other townships in the area, and also what the province is recommending through their provincial policy statements. Our planner had put that in place that right now Municipal Affairs is recommending 1 hectare for a size of a lot with some at a minimum of 0.8. So that's the reason why you have the breakdown right now anywhere from 0.8 up to, what is it, almost 2, I guess, 1.83. And so that ranges for the older people anywhere from 2 acres to 4.5 acres, those lots. With a 90-meter frontage. And we're just looking at the possibility, as I said before, of trying to get some return on investment when that property was purchased. It was purchased for a particular reason. That reason may not materialize at this point. So we have this vacant land. We have other projects that we'd like to manage, pay for, without having to resort to raising taxes. Now, the other piece was all part of a subdivision at some point. Maybe some of you have more information on Craigmore when it went actually in, and what that piece was doing. That piece has sat vacant for a long period of time now. Perhaps Councillor Haskins has more information on that one. And it is waterfront, although it is rather marshy, I think, out front, is it?
Yeah, the shallow shoreline.
Yeah. So we're looking at that too, and there are properties that butt up against that, just at the end of Craigmore. And we're looking at that too, since we have a number of properties actually back in the 80s, I guess, the early 80s, there was an attempt to, again, raise money for recreation, so some properties were sold. We were in a situation where they went to tenders quite often, and unfortunately we were restricted to accepting one of those tenders, and that just could be a one example of what happened. This was back in Maplewood subdivision on Sunny Shore Park, and actually Maplewood right at the corner. Maybe some of you own the property now, I don't know. But I think it went for 20-some thousand before a few months. It was back in the market by the person who purchased it for in the 60-some thousand. And we weren't able to do that. We couldn't actually operate at the time as real estate agents as such. So we've since changed the sale of real property bylaw, and we have that in place now. It's been updated a couple of times. And we can go onto the open market, and we can offer those properties for sale. And this took certain requirements with that. We have to make sure that there's a value associated with each property, and that can be either done initially, it was all through appraisal. We had to get a certified professional appraisal. Now we can go through a real estate opinion of value as well, which is a little more, well, it's less expensive, usually. One of the problems you run into, of course, there are many real estate agents out there as well, and they may vary on what they think it's worth, knowing the markets. And so we have to go through that, and according to our, I think it's 6.1, just going from memory, from our sale of real property bylaw, there are requirements. We can't just, again, go to the highest bidder. There are certain costs that have to be covered. We have to, first of all, make sure that it's a realistic value, and we also have to look at other costs, like the survey costs that we've encountered, and anything else that may solicitor fees, and all of that would have to be in the bid. Now, we haven't discussed yet, and that's why we want a public meeting to get some of your opinions on this, too. We haven't discussed yet whether we go the tender route or whether we go the real estate route. Either way, we need to know what the value is prior to going those routes. And so, in a sense, it'd be a minimum tender that could be offered. So it can't just be put out on the market like a tax sale and say that, you know, you can get it fairly cheaply. These are going to be, I guess we'll call it, as you said, the impact, the current value assessment sort of thing, either through, and I'm not saying that's a 2016 value now, no. It'll probably be the 2025 value. But I think that's what we have to decide. First of all, did we declare the property surplus? Is that a good move at this point? Do we just keep the property in the township name? The one thing that we can look at, we've discussed it a little bit, but not to any great extent, through the Ford government, provincial government right now, with wanting to build more homes, it might be the possibility of upgrading roads leading to those particular lots as well. If we can get into a grant situation, we'll be talking to our MPP as well, who's now Associate Minister of the Municipal Affairs, Graydon Smith. And so we're looking at possibility of tapping into some money that could help with the upgrading of that road. And I know that's a concern of people living in there right now. And we certainly did make that statement a couple of years ago that we wanted to turn all of the unassumed roads into assumed roads in the township. But that hasn't happened just yet, and there's still some steps we have to take. But that would be down the road sort of thing, and I'm just not sure that it's like, you know, which comes first, chicken, egg, whether you can actually put these properties on the market and sell and then apply for a grant, or whether you do it all as part of the process, and that's what we have to get straightened out yet from the government to what grants may be available. Well, I'll put it out to council, first of all, with some of this background and get your comments, which maybe we haven't discussed this publicly yet, certainly in the open, about, and that's where the discussions will take place, about the method we will use. I think Carly has offered a couple of different methods to us, and I think I've outlined them. And I'm wondering your council's opinions too, on what route we should be taking. Quite much.
Well, I've looked at the both options, and it's, I think we need to get a little bit more information on which route we go. I think the costs of the sale have a lot to do with it, and the value we will get for selling any municipal properties. So, yeah, that for me personally, I don't know the decision. I think right now it's a case of determining what properties we will put on the market. This set of five lots kind of came to the forefront. There is, I believe, another option or two that could be looked at, but I think it's important to get public input at feel on the selling of these properties?
Yeah, I think if you went to real estate, as you say, there's a cost, there are percentages that the real estate agent would take. If you go the tender route, then you still need a solicitor involved, and what their fee would be, I'm not sure. And you're also looking at more than one lot, so I'm not sure how that breaks down either, whether they give you a package deal or how that works. So they usually work on one piece of property and have a percentage. So that all has to be ironed out, as you said. Councillor Zubak?
Well, my feeling is we definitely need money. Somehow we got to get money. So I would like to hear what the people in there think first. But you know, somehow we have to get some money because that land is sitting there, and we have things that have to be done, mainly with roads. So I'd like to hear from the public first.
Yeah, we're in a situation, it comes up later tonight, we've been discussing it, though, certainly, and you may be aware of the $3 million debenture that we're looking at for Herdville Road, and over a 10-year period. And what's frightening, of course, is the interest that you pay by having to go that route is much better. I'm thinking of projects we did in the past. I would have to talk to our previous clerk administrator who managed it all with this building that was built. We also had the Veterans Memorial Bridge. We had the arena, the rink out here as well. Now, much of that was done through grants when we had Tony Clement in office and they had some money available. And we had three projects in quick succession. And we had a situation where the money was dealt with internally, borrowing internally sort of thing out of reserves. And we didn't go the debenture route. This is something new to us. And it's a little frightening, as we say, when you start to look at the interest you're paying over those 10 years. So we're trying to avoid the debenture as much as possible. And as Councillor Zulak said, it'd be nice to, even though you're spending some money to get return on investment, you're getting money in a different way that could be useful for other projects. I mentioned the one, there are many roads, of course, so I mentioned the one of the extra bays on the Public Works Garage. Okay, well, if that's okay with council, we can turn it over to the public and get your thoughts. And, as I say, the microphone's there. And we just get your name, and we need your opinions. Somebody has to go first.
First of all, I'm not shy. John Stewart, 29 Dockside Drive. I think at one of our closed meetings about the unassumed rural part, I expressed an interest in the property. I continue to express interest in the property as a property owner there already. I have what you need, a little bit of money available. It hinges on how much money, terms, conditions, etc. I am aware, I've been advised that you do have the authority to negotiate with an individual or individuals, if it should be. To me, five lots isn't important. One lot would suffice. I would take five. I'm open to an open dialogue. I know some of my neighbors as well that are here tonight and others are expressing interest, but nobody has stepped forward as I am tonight saying I'm here and I'd like to discuss it with you.
Well, good, you're right. That is one of the options. It's an option that's sort of is low on the scale to sell it to an individual property owner who's interested in it, because that's where we talk about the open market, and everything has to go in, and people either put in a tender bid on it, or it goes through the real estate route, and you put in an offer. But that is an option for adjacent property owners as well to do that. So that's something, again, council would have to decide. And there's nothing saying that it has to be, well, what have we got here, five lots. I mean, it could be one lot. We're looking at a situation where there would be maybe more interest with more people. Because as I said before, if we end up selling it as one lot, then certainly the purchaser could develop it into five lots, six lots. We don't know what the future would be of that. And then we have to... We can't anticipate, I mean, it's up to the individual to decide what to do with it, but we certainly want the best return on investment for the township, for the ratepayers that we can get. And then this way, too, we have some control if it's going as individual lots and what can be done there. If it's going to be rural, there's always a concern, especially people on the water, that rural allows you a lot of different uses, including a farm. Whereas many people on the water would prefer it to be rural residential across the road, so that there are limitations. There are only a couple of things you can do with rural residential. So again, a lot of things to work out. We'll just have to take it step by step, but we hear you, and I'm just interested if other people want to express their opinions. I think it is important, especially for people who have lots along there, on the water. You're going to have neighbors across the road, and do you want to be that neighbor? Do you want to own a piece of that? And are you willing to go to that extent of the the fair market value of what it's worth? And that gives you some control, as I said, of what happens across the road, but we still, as a township and it's public property, we have to go through the process. We can't just sell it to one particular person. Other comments? Must be some.
Scott Buckingham, Stony Road. I guess the questions are, I was glad to hear about the grants, specifically for roads and so on. The division of the properties, though, that doesn't sound like they've happened yet.
No.
So what process will be used for subdividing the property?
Turn it to Carly. I think we'd have to go through the surveyor. But.
So the municipality is exempt from the consent application process, so we wouldn't be putting a presentation or an application forward to the planning board. The municipality does have to conform with its official plan policies, so we've just retained a new planner from Bracebridge, their Planscape. I would suggest that we consult them to ensure that these lots conform with our official plan moving forward, and they'd be able to provide an opinion. There are some sections of the OP that are up for interpretation, so I would like to hear their comments as to what they would suggest and recommend.
Those sections within the OP you're referring to are regards to the number of subdivisions of a specific RU property?
So for the application, we would be only able to do two lots plus a retained. So the township wouldn't be able to move forward doing all five lots in one shot. I think council just wanted to let the residents know that their plan is to do up to five, but we would have to do that in multiple stages because that conforms to our OP. The other section also is all new development must front upon a year-round publicly maintained road subject to exceptions listed below. John Jackson, the author of the official plan, has a different interpretation for that verbiage than some other planners do, so we would need to get that clarified. As well, Mayor Moore did speak to grants, so potentially we may have to wait until the road is upgraded to sever those lots, depending on how the OP is interpreted.
Has there been any discussion around timeline for any of this to happen?
I don't think we've discussed it. Certainly, the sooner the better, especially when we look at the $3 million to be spent on Herdville Road. And we're hearing from Public Works crew all the time that the garage is not large enough for the equipment that they have. And, so time is of the essence sort of thing. I'm not sure with Planscape, we haven't really touched base with them unless Carly has to find out what the time frame might be. What happens is the two of the retained, as you said, what's often happening because the way it's interpreted and it's what council has supported is that the retained can also be severed again as well. So it's not as if you're limited. And it's not as if most of our official plan, if you read, if it's larger or greater than five, then you're looking at subdivision perhaps in the wording of the official plan, if it's under that. And what you do with consents is that you show that a subdivision is not required. There's no need for it. That consents could work. So, as I say, we have to go through the planner with that and get their interpretation. I would say, as I said before, the sooner the better. We're trying to get as many projects completed. completed as we can, but we know we're limited by the money that we have. And the budget's been set at this point, so there won't be any interim increase in taxes that I know of. I think it's all set. So I can't give you a time frame. The way the government's working, I've said already, Municipal Affairs looking at our official plan, and they've been over a year, and they just put us on a waiting list. And so that's unfortunate. Whenever you bring in the upper levels of government, unless it's something that the provincial government really wants to push, they can change legislation in short order. They've done that with a few documents that come up with very recently. One pertains particularly, it's a little off topic, with the new build at the school and the portables. There was a concern there that the town was holding up portables, so they just changed the legislation. Now you don't need municipal approval. And so it all depends, I guess, on what the provincial government is going to say to this too, and we can maybe investigate, as I say, the grants, and maybe our MPP can help us out in that. But I can't give you a timeline, though. It's
wanted to hear if any timeline expectations were there. It doesn't sound like it.
No. It's just something, though, that we will be pursuing and continuing to work on this year, certainly. And I'm not sure, you know, we haven't even as a council discussed it and what our priorities are going to be for capital projects for next year. We've had some that were put off, certainly. As certain roads deteriorate, they suddenly show up on our list too that have to be done. So this is not something that, depending on the cost, and again, the other thing in all of this too that's the unknown is the saleability of these lots. I mean, if they don't sell, we've spent some money preparing them for sale with planners, with solicitors, a number of people, and it may just sit there. Although it sounds like we have an interested person in the audience, but there are steps we have to take first.
So the price, or I guess the timing, everything will be impacted by the OP more specifically. So one of the other inclusions in the OP is the existence of the pit, the registered pit there, and the location of proximity to the properties.
Yeah.
So that may have an impact on the timing.
It may, yes.
Potential value as well.
Yeah, and again, our planner, I think, can help us with that when we talk to them.
Thank you.
Steve McDonnell. I'm at number 9, Dockside Drive. And I'm going to outbid this guy right here. So
you can win.
So my question is more, I guess, on process. Carly did mention one requirement, maybe to upgrade the roads to a certain standard. I assume that means assumption. Was that what you were meaning when you said that? Or is there a way for that, for you to upgrade the road without assumption being involved?
Well, upgrading the road would lead to assumption. I think that's what the residents would want. Our OP, John Jackson, he interprets it as year-round dwellings on the properties and publicly maintained. The township, as you know, does do winter maintenance, and your road association covers summer, so there is that. But we're excited to hear that the province is providing more grant funding for roads to bring them up to a standard. If the township can show that new lots are being created, we are not receiving funding for roads in any other way currently. We're needing to show development. All the grants that are coming through are asking if development is happening on those roads, and we're not eligible for a lot of funding because it's just reconstruction and we're not showing any new development.
So that leads to my real question, which is what mechanisms do you have where's the quickest mechanism you have to move that assumption process forward? I know there's a couple ways you can do it. Are you willing to do it quickly?
Well, I'm not sure Doug Ford will come here, but in his stead, I think our MPP would be one way to go, who can interpret some of the legislation and what they're pushing for. Certainly that worked well not that we were his favorites, but we did three projects in a very short order. And we had the shovel in the ground money available. So, and that was a big thing at the time, having that money so that we could go ahead with it.
I guess I'm getting at, you would, to assume the road, you'd have to get the property owners involved and agree. But the one way requires a lot of owners to agree, another way, maybe there's another way where you don't need as many to agree, you can kind of force it. This is what I'm getting at. Are you prepared to go that route or thinking about it to speed up the process?
Well, again, it's open to interpretation, I guess. I mean, you can develop lots on a year-round road, as I said, which that is a year-round road. It's not municipally owned. Well, it is municipally owned, but it's not municipally assumed. And so this is where you have to try to get that distinction. And certainly, as I said, that was one of our goals, to assume all of those roads, but there was a process that we put in place. This one may be an exception to it because of the possibility of selling some lots on it and receiving a grant. So the procedure that we had in place for Deerfield, for instance, yeah, we don't have any property in there that we can take advantage of. And the same for Moffett Road. That was also on the list. We're also in the same situation. There'd be no property that the township owns in there. So this is an exception, a bit of an anomaly in Dockside and the rest of 152. And I think what you're getting at, too, is the 152 is sort of split up into, you have Stony, is it Lane? And then you have Bruce Trail, too.
Bruce.
So it all comes as a package deal, is the thing. And when all that subdivision was put in, it was put in on private roads. That was the purpose of it, everybody having a right of access and agreement to go over that road, but it never was a municipal road. And that's been a bone of contention for years and years. So yeah, we have to certainly look at the interpretation of the official plan, what it's saying on the year-round road, municipally owned, and then there are some exceptions. So this is what we have to try to interpret.
Okay, and we'll stay tuned.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's all we can promise at this point. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank
but
you.
We certainly will keep you informed of the steps that we take. It's not as if.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Councilor Kiker.
Well, I think mostly what we're hearing is questions regarding process, but like, is there any feelings of opposition of the township selling this property, or is the majority in favor of the township selling the property?
Not sure if we're having the majority here, but
obviously I don't want to ever see anything built there. My comments are to secure the land and then leave it as open land as it is. I honestly do not want to see a trailer parked behind my home and potentially people living in the trailer trying to access the lake on my property. Believe me, there will be consequences to that one that may or may not be favorable to me. It is, as I refer to it, our piece of heaven. And we like it to be nice and quiet as it is and retain the privacy that we do have. And obviously when five lots appear and potential buildings on them of who knows at this point in time what, that could take a drastic change. And it will have a negative impact on the price of our properties potentially as well. And of course that's a concern with all property owners as well. So that's my personal feeling, and I think that's likely going to be echoed by a few others. Thank you.
Steve McDonnell again. Yeah, I have no opposition to selling the land. Yeah, it's sitting there. If I were to buy a lot or two, I would consider leasing it out to an apiary, get some bees going over there or something like that. And McKellar Mead maybe, something. I don't know. There's things you can do that would be very useful, I think. I know for the bees up the road here, he's always asking me, Steve, when can I start using that land? I said, They're working on it. They're working on it. So I've been supportive of something. If it's on the market, if I want it, I'll buy it. And I'll live up here and keep these.
Yeah, having sat on the planning board for a number of years, over the years, there's always that question on the application of future use. And oftentimes it's, we're going to keep it in the family, and then a for sale sign goes up the next day. So it's always difficult to even know down the road, unless it's left as a legacy or a conservation area or something, it's difficult to know what will happen to the property. During our lifetimes, it may stay that way, it may stay vacant, but then who knows what could happen if the next person in line with that property decides to do something else with it. I don't know how we guarantee the suggestion that it's going to stay that way. That's the thing with, of course, development and anything with planning. You actually purchase property knowing what's around you, in most cases. But with rezonings, you know, things are possible. And sales, and so things can happen. I just don't know, when we look at that, we can't really predict the future. If it's a person who purchases it and say it's going to stay this way, as long as we see it, it may. But, I mean, this is where you get into that fear of thy neighbor sort of thing, and I don't know. You know, you have people opposed to it, perhaps, because of the unknown and what could develop there. I know that happened recently in Whitestone. The protest was unbelievable for a factory that was suggested up there, up along Highway 124. And I don't know where it sits right now, to be honest. So that's the thing with this right now. It's zoned rural as such, and I'm throwing that out, although council hasn't discussed that in any great detail, the rural residential, which would put more control, I guess, on what can happen there, as opposed to just leaving it all rural. And then you could have any number of uses of that particular property. And maybe that's what people want, but that might be one of the conditions. Again, council would have to discuss that it be subject to a rezoning before it even goes on the market. So, sorry we can't give you a timeline. Go ahead.
One question, John, 2823 Dockside Drive. Do you have any future plans for the pit itself? And where I'm going with this is, we just talked about zoning.
Yeah.
Heaven forbids you decide to sell a pit, someone decided they were going to commercially keep it running, and then look at the properties that are across on Dockside Drive. And depending on your zoning, they could continue to make that situation happen.
From all the information we've received, that pit is pretty well done, as far as I know. So I think what we're looking at is, if it's still active, I guess it is, probably closing that. But again, I can't speak. We haven't really discussed it in any detail, but I don't think there's much more that can be extracted there. So now that right now it's zoned industrial for that area. And I'm not exactly sure where the boundaries are. So as mentioned earlier, we'd have to make sure you talk about the extent from the pit and where you can actually start building. If it's a closed pit, it would be different than an actually active operating one. There'd be a difference there. And there'd have to be a closure properly done, different assessments and things like that too. Because again, we've inherited that pit from a private owner, and we don't know necessarily what it was used for. Extraction primarily, we assume. Could have been used for other purposes. So I think the thing is that not to worry about it being starting up again, but I think what you're probably getting at is that are we going to close it and sell it as a possibility? And again, council hasn't.
And my concern here is that I came from the Niagara region, and quarries down there had a habit of jumping roads and then continuing the quarry.
Yeah.
So that is why I asked what your plans were for the pit.
Yeah.
And then as to zoning for the dockside properties that you're contemplating, whether you would actually be zoning it as residential rather than what Go ahead, Mike.
So where the currently the pit is, that is basically the footprint of what is zoned for, I think it's an M2 for a pit. The properties across from Dockside, those are zoned rural residential, or rural use, sorry.
Okay, so they are two different.
Yes. So we would require a rezoning application, which would be a full public process for anyone to oppose or support it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Councilor Zumar?
And to open up a new pit, like if they were to rezone and to open up a new pit, it's millions of dollars for them to get a permit to expand the footprint.
Okay. I didn't know if those properties were tied into the pit currently. That was my question.
No, there's a special footprint that just for that pit that it's licensed for.
Okay.
Yeah, it's unfortunate we don't have a big map. You can see the M2 and the extent of where it goes, but in that pit area. Yeah. Question?
No.
Okay, well, thanks for coming out. Certainly we'll keep you informed of what information we find. And as I say, it's not the majority showing up here tonight. There's some that are interested, and there probably just as many or more who don't want this to happen, so just didn't happen to show up tonight. So we have to see. And as I said before, the reasoning for it, you can pass that along perhaps to your neighbors as well. It could be, I mean, it could be rezoned by the township to industrial all over the place. It could be a commercial, it could be any number of things, but we think that this is probably the best route to go for the people who reside in there. And hearing that a couple people are interested in actually looking at the part of the property, or maybe all of the property, I mean, that's a positive thing too, I think. Yes, go ahead.
One more question. Do you have the power to just say to the residents, we are assuming the road and we're going to do it, and here's your bill?
I think the residents would be quite happy if we said we were assuming the road.
The reason I ask that is that if you were to, if you really want those lots gone, whether it's John or somebody else, would you look at that as an option to actually make the sale happen?
It would depend, as I said, on the planner's interpretation, too, on whether we needed to go that far. As I said before, with our resolution, we were certainly of the opinion that all the unassumed roads were, by the end of this term of council, what we're hoping for, they would be assumed. And there'd be a process that we'd follow. That process, unfortunately, hasn't gained favor with some of the residents. It's a process that we've followed because we just had a presentation last week, I guess, or from a person who is a consultant for roads, building, planning, and he was saying what happens in a lot of these places that you don't build to standard, the roads deteriorate. We've got a good example in our own township right now. It wasn't properly surveyed, I guess, or reviewed. It wasn't a study done, and the road is falling apart. And now all repairs are going to be paying for that portion of the road that has to be corrected. So what we'd like to do is actually start fresh. We take what's there, yes, but we're trying to plan for the future. There should be a certain width. There should be drainage. Drainage is one of the big problems that you can't really see return on investment of that until the road falls apart. And also easements and all these things that our engineer is putting into place. And, of course, the cost is going up because of these things, but we're looking at the future. And we're trying to, I would say, too, we talk here about impact. If you have a road like that up to a standard that the township has set, even though the engineer now is saying the standard should even be higher, that's his background, the value on your property should also be increased, I would think, with a road like that. I don't know how that the impact actually works that, but location is part of it. And she did say tonight that an unassumed road is different on the value of your property as opposed to a year-round maintained road. Mm-hmm. I don't know by how much. She didn't seem to think it was not
she
a lot.
Kind of said
a little bit, yeah. So yes. I don't know what she really meant by it. But
so another question. if you do move ahead with the assumption of whatever road, is there still a 2-year wait period before you actually assume it, waiting to see if the road does deteriorate before you take full possession and have to make repairs on the taxpayer's dime when the contractor is probably liable for it?
It all depends, as you say, on how the assumption is carried out. Right now, the roads policy talks about that 2-year period. But if the township decided to go in and do all of that, then obviously that 2-year period would be, it's up to the township now if the township assumes it. And all the ratepayers would be paying for it. But I'm not saying that all the ratepayers in the township would agree to that in one particular subdivision. That's why we've gone the route of the people who are going to benefit most from that road upgrade will be the people who end up paying for it. So as far as the 2-year waiting period, it all depends on how it's assumed, I guess, and what the process is, whether you go through what we're recommending at this point or whether we change direction because of grants or maybe assuming earlier. That's a big step for us to make, too. So.
Okay.
Councilor Keck.
What I'm sort of hearing, I think Steve and John as well, you sort of are sort of mentioning the two different options of assuming the road, like fees and charges. And is it develop Ontario regulation? The develop is it development charges?
Yeah,
which was done on McKellar Lake Road.
McKellar Lake Road was development charges.
Development charges, which the municipality basically says we're going to do this, and this is what it's going to cost. Whereas fees and charges requires an effort on behalf of the association to get the community in that area together to agree to the. So are we sort of hearing that may be the option that some of the residents would prefer?
Which option do you think?
Is the not the fees and charges, but the development charges?
I mean, speaking for myself, that's less headaches for everybody. It's just, it's done. The township isn't paying for it, really, we are. But again, going back to my question, it was a matter of, you spoke about trying to get roads assumed in your term here. If there's a 2-year waiting period, well, that's not going to happen at all. Right? You take a little well past that.
Yeah, well, we started earlier, but it's been held up in the process, mainly by the residents who have yet to get the support, I guess, of people in certain areas. Yeah. And again, that's a goal. I mean, that's not saying. Other comments? I know they're all tied together, but it's mainly the sale of the property and whether people are agreeable to that. Okay, until we get more information, we probably can't go too much further, unless there's somebody online. Probably can't go too much further in the discussion at this point. But we'll be reaching out to our various sources. There might be another public meeting. Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, one more question. So if you decide to move ahead with selling those properties, will the people that are immediately adjacent to those properties get proper notice that this is happening? Or will it just be this kind of a meeting?
There'll be notices. I don't know what the distance is, but we would probably notify everyone in there because they're going to be affected by it. So. Yeah, I would say, yeah, that'll be taken care of. Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you.
As I said, there's still a long meeting here if you wish to stay.
There's no food. There's
no food. Oh, there's potluck. You're supposed to bring it up.
Next time.
No, because now we're speaking about fees and charges.
No, but we're talking about a public meeting. That's a committee of the
whole. Oh, sorry. Yeah. We didn't have anything else for fees and charges in the cemetery.
So we have resolution 25-237, moved by Councillor Kekkonen, second by Councillor Haskin. Be it resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar does hereby reconvene into regular session at 7:45 p.m. Call a question. All those in favor? None opposed. Carried. is hereby moved into committee of the whole at
7:45
p.m. to discuss the draft fees and charges bylaw and the draft cemetery bylaw version 2. Call the question. All in favor? None opposed? Carried. Cemetery is still fresh in our mind from last meeting, but we can do fees and charges first. It doesn't matter. Fees and charges it is. Okay. It's first in the list. Maybe just, again, a little background. You can bring us up to date on why we're doing this at this point and who you consulted.
So the last time the fees and charges bylaw was amended was in 2021. So now with it being 2025, it's a good time to look at it. You will notice the bylaw is a bit different, whereas it's including all fees and charges that the municipality would be charging. This way, you're not looking at different bylaws to find fees. It's a one place where you would look to find any fee or charge that the municipality would do. So within the table of contents, you can see the different schedules correlate to the different administration, waste, planning, building, cemetery, fire, municipal recovery rates, any charges that way. You will see there's a column for the current fee as per the bylaw in 2021, and then the blue column to the right is a recommended fee. Recommended fees were researched based on our area municipalities, what they're charging. Between the clerk, the treasurer, and the chief building official, those recommended fees were come up with. Obviously, the building department ones were done by the CBO. Once this fees and charges bylaw is ready for passing, we do need to pass a bylaw to amend the building bylaw because it makes reference to fees and charges bylaw. There's also some additions with ratepayer and non-ratepayer charges. A lot of municipalities have different rates for their ratepayers and higher ones for their non-ratepayers, so that's been added specifically to facility rentals. Our ratepayers are charged a lower amount than someone renting the hall that's not a ratepayer within the municipality. We're open to comments, questions, or suggestions for fees. We just wanted to put forth something to council as a starting point, but if you see fees that you feel should be higher or lower, we can take that back and do a bit more research.
Okay, great. Thank you. Open it up to council for comments. Councilor Zulak, first.
Okay. Just under administration, just a couple of questions. Tax certificate per roll number. So it's 6240 for that, for someone to get a certificate?
Correct.
Okay. I didn't realize that. And then...
Sorry, Debbie, I should say that a tax certificate is usually obtained when there's a sale of property. So anyone can call into the municipal office and ask what they're owing for property taxes.
Okay.
So it's different. This is actually a certificate that says if the current property owners have property taxes outstanding, and this would be given to lawyers of
okay.
the purchaser.
All right, that's clear. Thank you. Then if we move down to trailer permit, 228 is going up to 300. Was there a reason for that?
Just to be comparable with other municipalities.
Okay. And then I'm the ad board license fee. It says $52. I don't know, for some reason, is that the signs that we have out there for people that have a business or something that are advertising?
Yeah.
I thought for some reason it was when they first got that they paid $300 and then there was a fee so much a year. Does anyone remember that? Mike?
So I think on our desks there was a resolution that was passed by council that was a recommendation from the There was some discussion from the Business Economic Development Committee regarding those board signs, and I was trying to find the information today, but there, I'm just wondering if that resulted in that there being no charge for ad board sign initial fee, no charge. Like, this was in 2020 that the Business Economic Development Committee was discussing it.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, because the resolution is very vague, and I was trying to find other references regarding what the discussion was about, but I couldn't find specific details, because I was trying to figure out that as well.
Okay, so if a person wants to get one sign for their business, right, yearly they have to pay $52.
Correct.
Okay, so if they got six signs for the different ones, they paid that appropriate price. Okay, just to make that clear for me. Can I go on to the next one? Or
yeah, I think your memory goes back quite a ways, because initially I think it was set up that way, that it was a higher cost.
Yeah.
That's when we first put them into place.
Yeah, that's what I
think. And then there was some over the years, I think, with service groups and clubs that they get it free. I think that came in. So I'm not sure if that shows in the legislation or not. People like, I would say, the MLCA and different ones, they lobbied for that with previous councils. And I believe they got it, but I'm not sure.
And if this council is wanting to do that moving forward, I would recommend having it within this fees and charges bylaw, because staff coming to put the charge on are going to be looking at this bylaw. So if there's any particulars, they should be listed within this bylaw.
If we can just stay on that page, like that
yeah.
one chart that you're working on. So transfer of arrears to tax account, there's nothing on that line. Should there be something there?
Other municipalities do have a charge for it. Our treasurer recommended not having a fee for it.
Okay. Regarding our signed bylaw 2004-17, then it mentions, so the last line in that chart, fingerboard sign application, $52. So the application fee for a sign, fingerboard sign, when there's not a sign post in place, it's $70. So should that be added onto this chart as well, that there is a difference when there's no post in place?
Yeah, we can add a subsection.
As well, I'm just wondering if all of these align with the sign bylaw, because there are different class of signs, ground sign, facial wall sign, permit fee $50 for each of those, non-accessory sign $50, non-accessory sign located on municipal property in accordance with section 2.1E, $50 per annum, and then sign variance application, $100 in addition to regular permit fee.
So in that case, I would recommend having a separate schedule, so taking the signs out of the administration schedule, and we'll make a separate one for signs.
Okay.
And notice as well under the general government 911 sign, in the past, I noticed that there was a post as well. We don't supply the posts anymore?
No.
Okay. And that road damage deposit, should that say refundable, the $750, so that people realize they don't have to pay that?
Yes, we can add that.
We talked about one of these things, the unassumed road allowance and improvement agreement. Maybe that's getting into our road policy too much, and we can't put it. It doesn't happen very often, so it's probably not the place to put it. The other one, though, that we have dealt with, the road closure application, does that show up somewhere in?
That should be under planning.
Under planning, okay. And I know we have a resolution that set fees.
Yes, so under the planning schedule, there's a road allowance closure application stating the non-refundable fee and then the deposit.
Excellent. And those $750 and $1,000?
Yes,
okay.
But I would recommend $2,000 for the deposit, just on past applications over the last 2 years.
Okay.
Okay, just a question. Multi-purpose room only. It says recommended $40. And then for the youth room, it says $100. What is the, why such a big difference? Like the youth room is more out of the way.
Yeah, the youth room offers a separate entrance and private washrooms, whereas anyone using the multi-purpose room would have to use the washrooms located within the
okay.
community center.
Okay. Also, under exemptions, it says the McKellar Market down at the bottom there, use of Minerva Park at no charge. Well, up here I don't see where there is a charge for someone to use Minerva Park.
I will add Minerva Park.
And also, I think there should be a fee here for the hall, a late fee. Like if there, and we should be setting times, like if a person is to have the hall for a half a day, like a day or a day and a half, there should be a time, like when the half starts, so that if anybody goes over that, they are charged the late fee.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
I'm wondering about the agreement that they signed. Does it have a deposit in that?
Yes.
So is that sort of covering what you're suggesting?
Well, I don't know, because like... the deposit, if there's any damage or anything, right? But if they go, I think it's another thing if they go over their time frame.
Well, could that be included in the deposit
yeah.
or a late fee?
Yeah.
Rather
could
than
it?
Separate.
We
yeah.
do that, yeah.
And I think it should be a good amount, because that throws everything off if somebody, if it's overbooked, if it's double booked or something.
Yes, it has an effect on the next.
That's all for me.
I was interested that you have it highlighted here, a table rental off-site and damage deposit. How often do we do that, and should we be doing it?
We currently don't offer it, and that's why I added it, but highlighted it. Other municipalities do offer table and chair rentals out to the public, and other municipalities do as well, so I didn't know if that's something council is interested in. I know our tables and chairs are a little older. Don't know if you want them leaving the building. I just put it in as more of a discussion point. It can be taken out for sure, but I just wanted to bring that to council's attention, whether you want to get into that rental business or just keeping the tables and chairs within this facility.
Well, we've always had a concern, I think, for that's why we wanted the custodian to be responsible for actually setting up and taking down, because if you leave it to a party after the party, then who knows what shape those tables and chairs are going to be in when they put them away. And if you take them off site, I think there's even more of a concern. Whether we want to get into that or not, we haven't, and I'm not sure it's a good idea. I know with older ones, when we replace the ones we have, we give them to different groups within the township often. But I'm not sure about the rental, whether that's a good idea. It you just need another person to keep track of it all, I guess, and the condition they're in when they come back, and whether they even come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think our chairs are ideal for renting, because, especially if it's for an outdoor event, they get rained on. Well, all our senior card players, we get a wet rear end for weeks. So I don't think we want to get into that business. To me, it sounds a little too much. There must be private businesses that would offer that service.
Yes, go ahead, Councilor Kirkham. You're still on facility, right?
The facility, yes.
Okay.
We're staying on that. Just because we do have a bylaw to establish rental fees for use of the space in the McKellar Township Community Center and sundry other public facilities. So, is there going to be a link? Because it has all the information, the rental agreement, it has all the information. Specific information according to this, to the fees actually in this bylaw, which I think they're pretty important for a person to be able to find that information quite readily.
So we can either amend that bylaw to reference the fees and the current fees and charges bylaw to find rates for rentals, but keep the policies and the rules and procedures within that bylaw, or we could repeal that bylaw and redo it, and then also add that to find the fees and charges to look at the current fees and charges bylaw.
Because I think this is makes this quite a comprehensive exercise, like when you're cross-referencing the actual bylaws and see if actually everything is aligns with the fees and charges bylaws. As we go along, I'll point out a few other discrepancies that information isn't consistent. So,
What's the date of that one? I remember.
So there might be a...
Might be an amendment.
There might be an amendment. The one I have here is 2010-16, which is amended by 2011-06, but then we had a draft bylaw in 2016, so I believe if that wasn't, there might have been another amendment after that.
Yeah, that's one of the I guess it's the whole policy procedure with amendments to bylaws, it's hard to keep track of them. Keeping it in one place seems to make sense, but as you say, we're going to have to... we can't rule out all of the conditions and all the requirements. The actual chart, I guess, could be amended or make reference to the new fees and charges. It's very difficult for the public. It's hard enough for staff to cross-reference. And so somehow we could combine the two or at least make it available to people so that they know. You don't want a situation where you have two different rates sitting out there and neither one has been repealed.
And for any bylaw moving forward that would be subject to fees and charges, then we would reference the fees and charges bylaw and not have those specific fees